The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid. Wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson. I'm your host. It is Wednesday, December 8th, which means only one thing. Well, actually, it means two things. One, we're 9 days away from the Cure Bowl. And two, it's a pretty grateful show.
By the way, I feel like that sounds dead now. Like the origin of that sound was brought on by one Manny Diaz at the University of Miami, but he is out. Mario Cristobal.
Mario Cristobal said, "Hey, Brian Cristobal. Kelly. Hey, Brian Kelly. Hold my beer," and did answer some questions in Spanish at his press conference. Like,
I mean, well, first off, he is fluent. He's a native of the area. I know, it's just that awesome. Seems to be a little more authentic than my family.
My family and I. did we talk about this last week? I can't remember.
I don't know.
I think it happened afterwards. Okay. All right. Well, we're going to talk about that. We'll also talk about the AFC playoffs and some other stuff. But so the Brian Kelly thing, when we did this show last week, Lincoln Riley had just left. No, but Brian Kelly had left, hadn't he? Yeah, we talked about Brian Kelly.
Brian Kelly had left at that point.
But we had not seen the "my family and I" when he faked the Southern accent at the LSU basketball game. So my only question, my question to you is, well, I mean, I guess two questions. One, do you look at that and think, I'm kind of glad this fake loser's out of my life? Two, were you at the press conference? Were you like up on the stage with the guy, the new coach? Did I see that?
Yeah. I was asked to come in and MC the introductory press conference, which, you know, obviously Marcus was named the head coach, gosh, what, 5 days ago now? Six days ago, whatever it's been. But our president, Father John Jenkins, was over in Rome when all this was going on. So he wanted a chance to come back, have more of a formal introduction where we can kind of introduce and really give Marcus, I think, the respect he deserves in taking over this position. So really cool deal. I was really excited to be a part of it. I think you could see, just listen to him talk, why there's so much excitement about what he is potentially going to be as a head coach in Notre Dame. So a lot of moving parts still, putting together the staff and all that, but a lot of excitement there. And
one more thing on Notre Dame, though. Don't you think it's a good idea to just hammer Notre Dame in their bowl game, like whatever the spread is, just because they're going to be like, I mean, aren't they going to come out and play, like, give everybody, like, F you, Brian Kelly, we're here for our guy now type of game?
I mean, sure, but don't you try to do that every game? I mean, this isn't about Brian Kelly anymore. It's really not. Like, I think people forgot about him a while ago. And one of the things, meaning like a week ago when he left, and one of the reasons why I say that is because this decision, this hire, was in large part due to like the players that are there and partially what they wanted, what they've done, and what they've accomplished. Like, as much as we want to act like, you know, Brian Kelly's legacy is the winningest coach in Notre Dame history, the players are what accomplished that. Sure. He just happened to be the guy who's, you know, the title is the coach. And so, you know, Marcus Freeman being hired there had a lot to do with the relationship he's built with them. And so, you know, they're not going to be going out there and playing any different than they normally would. It's just trying to take things to another level. The whole video clip of Brian Kelly coming off the way he did is like something, I don't know, out of a movie. Like, I'm not even sure what to make of it. Cause what excuses do you use for sounding like you have a Southern accent. You've been there for, what, 48 hours, 72
hours? You're from Boston. You've been coaching in Notre Dame for, like, 12 years, and all of a sudden you land in Louisiana. It's like when you
here's what it is. It's freshman year, right? Everyone goes off to college. And you got a few friends, and I had a couple, you know, girls who are friends that did this. Like, now I didn't see them before Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
We were still playing football, but
they come,
you know,
back,
everyone comes back before Thanksgiving. They're at the bar. They're, like, talking the Southern accent. You're going, what?
Yeah.
Like, you've been there for 6 weeks. Yeah, like, you're faking a Southern accent. Like, you haven't developed a Southern accent in 6 weeks. Like, everyone knew someone from high school that came back to your hometown and did that. That's very similar to what this is like.
Or like,
it, just,
like,
it comes off.
You go and eat in a Mexican restaurant, you know, and your dad's like, he tries to, like, do the inflection, or, like, you're traveling and does the inflection. Is a way, like, to, is it to, right, to assimilate yourself within, you know, like, it's a verbal tick, I mean, thing, I think.
It was either that, or he was trying to act like he's, like, speaking in their language so they could understand him. Like, if he just said family, like, in a more of a Boston accent, they couldn't understand him. It was one of the more bizarre things.
He goes, I haven't even won all my games yet. It's like, first of all, anybody from the South would say ain't there. So, like you can't, nobody would be like, I have not even won my games yet. He sounded like a Foghorn Leghorn. Like, I say.
But that was such a weird thing to say, too. Like, yeah, you haven't even played a game yet, like, let alone won all your games yet. Yeah. It was just a weird, weird thing.
Here's my question, the follow-up question. It's sort of a two-part question, as all my questions are. But did he run this by his family and his wife?
Family.
Did he ask his wife, like, hey, I think I'm going to do this. I think I'm going to do a little Southern accent thing at the basketball game. Was she like, and if so, was she like, oh, that's fantastic, Brian. You're killing it. You sound just like everybody down here. And then two, after the basketball game and all the mockery that occurred, has he been talking like that since then around his family, around his friends, around his coaches? Is he going to do press conferences like this? Was this a one-off thing, or is this going to be permanent?
First off, we have a rule for the rest of the show. All right. You have to say family every time you say it. All right. So you can try posing that question again, but make sure you say family the proper way moving forward. Okay.
Fair. For the rest of our lives.
For the rest of our lives.
Our lives.
I do declare. Mrs. Kelly is a saint. Packy is, like, coolest, sweetest person ever. I don't know that she would subscribe to that. I always think, like, his father was a politician, so maybe this comes off from that background. An understanding that you kind of got to relate to the people you're, you know, going to see and, you know, talking politics with. So maybe that had something to do with it. I honestly do not know. And I was thinking to myself, like, all right, like, maybe he had a few drinks and maybe just his speech slowed down a little bit, where if you slow down anyone talking, they could sound Southern, you know, kind of slow it down. But then I was thinking to myself, my wife's from Boston. And what happens to her when she starts drinking too much? She starts cussing, which is a trait of most people from Boston.
Screaming,
and she starts
getting
a Boston accent.
Yeah.
It's like she starts cussing and has a Boston accent. Like, go park the car. I'm like, where did that come from?
Yeah.
And so that's where I was like, so that doesn't even make sense to me, because you figure the Boston accent would have came out. But it was probably, of everything that happened last week in college football, that was the most bizarre thing, I think, was seeing that clip.
I've searched Brian Kelly accent. I've got like Google News alerts set for it, because I need to know that the next time he talks to anybody, because I want to hear what it sounds like, and I need to know if he's continuing to do this, and is he gonna lead a double life? Is he talking like normal at home and like this in public? I would be insane.
I want to know how recruits take it, because it would come off as really disingenuous to me. Like, it would come off as, like, this guy's just trying to, you know, be a used car salesman. Like, that's how I would feel. I would not be able to trust anything he said if he's faking an accent just because he's now coaching the South. Like, that would be hard to stomach or swallow, I think, if you're the parents or if you're a recruit. Now, and look, maybe the motivation, that it doesn't matter. They're like, I don't care if he fakes whatever he wants. As long as we help win a lot of football games, win a national championship, and I can go to the NFL, it's all that matters to me. You know, you can talk whatever accent you want, as long as we accomplish those things.
That's right. All right, anyway, let's get to...
By the way, Will, you being someone from the South, were you offended by that? Like, I always wonder, you know, if especially in this day and age where everyone's sensitive about everything, were you offended by someone who's, like, from the East Coast, like up north, a Yankee, trying to make an impression of y'all down there in the South? You hear?
I wouldn't say that I was offended. It's sort of like, you know, that Seinfeld episode where it's, I guess it's Bryan Cranston, you know, from Breaking Bad, is the dentist. And he converts to Judaism and they're for the jokes. And they're like, hey, Jerry, are you offended as a Jewish person? He's like, no, I'm offended as a comedian. I'm not offended as a Southern person. I'm offended by someone trying to I don't know what offends me, but it's like, it's just so flagrant. Anyway, we've gone 10 minutes into this program and talked about nothing but Brian Kelly's accent, which is fine by me.
Can we talk about your patriotic? I know people aren't necessarily watching this. Your patriotic frat boy outfit, though. You got the hat. I believe it's got the rope going across, the red shirt. Like, you can.
This is a home field shirt. I'm actually wearing an Indiana University home field
Hoosier shirt. Like, again, middle America. Like, Hoosiers. Go Hoosiers. Literally be a flag. You could be outside on a flagpole of a frat house, just you waving in the wind with what you're wearing right now. That's how patriotic you are.
This is what I wear every day. My hair is just messed up, so I throw on a hat.
You just look this fratty every day. Is what you're saying.
I'm also wearing I'm wearing joggers, which is, I guess, not quite as fratty, and some slippers because it's, you know,
it's probably fratty now, to be honest with you. They've gone soft. Yeah. They stopped wearing their various topsiders with salmon colored pants this time of year. So
that's right. It's too cold for the salmon colored shorts to be out there in these streets. Anywho, speaking of cold, it's pretty cold in Buffalo on Monday night. I thought that the Bills, you know, we talked about this, of course, you can listen to the takeaways show in the podcast. I thought the 14-10 Bills victory of the Patriots victory of the Bills, was awesome. Like, I enjoyed it. Is that weird?
No, I thought it was a really fun game to watch because it put the scheme and execution kind of on the coaching staff to a degree, but like the level of execution in particular for the Patriots was unprecedented. I mean, they were a one-dimensional team. They really, outside of three pass attempts, two of which Matt completed, that was it throughout the game, man. Like they said they were going to run the football and we're going to mix up who's getting it. But they really challenged the Buffalo Bills. And maybe they saw something, too, a couple weeks ago where the Bills gave up, like, over 260 yards to the Colts. You know, maybe they saw something there. But clearly there's something that the Patriots were able to exploit. And I think the frustration, which you saw from the questions, you know, post-game to Micah Hyde and to Jordan Poyer and even Sean McDermott, like what he said about Bill Belichick, there's a lot of frustration there. And I think it was all brought on by the fact that, like, basically in a game where the weather conditions dictated something, like, the Bills, who are a more talented team.
Yep.
I think it's safe to say that. Maybe they're more talented. I don't even know if they're more talented anymore.
I mean, they were favored in this game, and they're at home, too. They're at home. They have a higher ceiling offensively. And I think they're more talented.
But I don't even care about that anymore. Like, this game – okay, for example – what did I take away from a weather game like that is I don't care what your ceiling is. If you can't run the football, if you can't find different ways of winning the game, you're not a team that's going to compete for a Super Bowl. I'm sorry, you're not.
Yeah.
Like, as good as this team can be, you play in Buffalo, you play outside the conditions. New England just took you to the woodshed, basically being like, yeah, we're just going to run the football, try and stop it, and the Bills couldn't stop it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a problem. The Bills can't stop the run, and they can't run the football. And they ran okay, but, I mean, you know, the Pats were missing Kyle Duggar. Missing AJ Klein was a problem for the Bills, but I mean, that's not the excuse. I mean, they passed the ball three times. Like, and I don't know if you saw it. I tweeted out, but I'd seen it in the pregame and I didn't make the connection until afterwards, but Belichick was wearing, when he was doing his interview with Lisa Salters, he was wearing a Navy midshipman face mask.
Yeah.
And yeah. I mean, if all we know about Bill Belichick, like, he could have grabbed a little blue mask, you know, they got the cases of them everywhere. He purposely put on a Navy midshipman mask and then went out there and ran the ball 46 times and threw three passes. Like, that doesn't seem like an accident to me.
No, he's, you know, signaling what he was going to do, and they still
signaling his intent on the pregame interview. Yeah,
and it's pretty amazing.
Yeah,
and I mean, it is Army Navy week. There is history there.
His dad coached there for like 40 years, but still, yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, and so he's showing his allegiance, right? His pride of who he's rooting for.
Yeah.
But I'd say this, Navy has not been the same in this series the past 5 years. I think they've only won once in the past five in that matchup. But, yeah, both Army and Navy like to run football.
My point was just that Belichick, I think that Belichick saw, he went out there for, you know, they went out there and did warmups and did their, you know, saw the weather, saw what was going on. You know, you go back in there and you sort of, you know, not change your game plan, but once they realized what was happening with the weather and how it was going to be impossible to throw the ball going one direction, this is what makes Belichick so great. Is he said, hey, you know, right, what? We're going to run it 46 times.
I think what makes Bill Belichick the best coach in the history of the NFL is he's able to maximize every single player's potential while at the same time minimizing their downside.
Yep.
Like Mac Jones, that's the coldest game he's ever played in.
Yeah.
Think about this. He's from Jacksonville, Florida, went to the bowl school. Then he went to Alabama. Didn't play any cold games. Like, hate to get people to understand this. Had probably never been outside of practice in Foxborough like this year. Has never been in a game or a situation like that.
He tweeted in 2015, I've never seen snow. Like, 2000, he's like 17 years old. I've never seen snow.
So what's the one thing you don't want to do with a pivotal divisional game on the road? Put your rookie quarterback, who's done a tremendous job this year,
yep,
and try to put on his shoulders to go win the game. Just, there's no need to do that. Your defense is playing well enough. Your offense is capable of running the football. And they did a masterful job. It really was like a clinic in being able to basically say, we're going to do one thing, and can you stop us? And they couldn't. So you got to give a lot of credit to Coach Belichick. And that's where, like, every single time, I mean, I don't know if I think a lot of people are like hesitant to jump on board for what he's done this year and what this team is, because what he does gets overlooked. Like, we like seeing like high powered passing games and down the field stuff and trick plays, and they just do like the simple things really, really well. And it just, I don't know. I think a lot of people get tired of it because it's kind of boring, but
sure,
it wins and it's successful, man.
I mean, everybody who was, you know, not that Twitter matters, but like, even on a text thread with, you know, some colleagues who remain nameless, like, this game stinks. I hate this game. I don't want to go to jury duty tomorrow.
Oh, Pete Prisco?
Yeah. Yes. And
is that why he's not, I'm not on with him today?
Yeah, he's at jury duty.
Who doesn't find an excuse? And by the way, like, Pete could find an excuse. Pete is one of the more miserable human beings. Like,
yeah.
I've always been told, like, the advice is just walk in and say, like, you can't stand everyone. Like, I'm the last person you want on the stand or last person you want on this jury.
Like, I can't person. Stand it. That is Pete. He doesn't like anyone.
Yeah. just all you have to do is walk in when they're doing the jury selection and say that, and they'll be like, all right, this guy's out. Like, get him out of here.
Yeah. Pete claims that he was recognized by a security guard, by the way. Do we believe that?
Well, it wouldn't have been as Pete Prisco. It would have been as, you know, something for the Lollipop Guild. I don't know.
I was just looking at, you know, week 15, 2001. Dolphins come to Foxborough. Pats win 2013. Tom Brady 11-19, 108 yards, touchdown. Like, I think the 2001 comparisons are legit with Mac Jones and this Patriots team and Tom Brady and that Patriots team, just in terms of the way that they're built, how they want to win. Belichick has sort of crafted it like that.
They are, but they're different offensively. Like, I will say this forever because it was one of the hardest lessons I had to learn from Josh McDaniels. And that was, you know, the offense that I ran at Notre Dame with Charlie Weiss is not the same offense as what he runs.
Sure.
It's just not. It's the same, you know, terminology. You know, your 56 protection is the same 56 protection. No matter which place you're at, the difference is how they go about utilizing what they're doing in the passing game. And so it's they're similar, but they're not, right? Like, yeah, they have a great defensive running game, and it kind of stops there because the passing game is so much different. Things are so much more spread out. The way they go about throwing the football, it's different. So there are similarities, but like, I hate making that like direct comparison or correlation because it's still not quite the same compared to what they were doing. And I'll just say this. You know, you always had kind of Drew Bledsoe as that backup who was behind Tom for a period of time early on, right? And you can take a little bit more risk to a degree as far as what you're doing because Drew could come in and he could take over. Like, I don't think New England feels like they're in that position right now if something was to happen to Mac Jones. So I think they have to be even more cognizant of how to protect him and how to get the ball out of his hand quick, which plays to his strengths.
All right, yeah, no, I think those are two fantastic points. My take, my sense of the 2001 comparison is more macro, but the offense is a great. I mean, that's you. I mean, I like that. I bring up the comparison. I'm like, all right, Brady played in both offenses. I mean, it's obviously different in the way that they operate there. I sort of mean how they just have this young quarterback, and you know, Tom was in his second year, Max a rookie, obviously, but just an efficient, like perfect mindset and sort of mental approach. And like you see Mac, you know, I don't know if you watched his press conference after last night, but I mean, you know, it'd be pretty easy to be like, hey, you threw the ball three times. Like, do you want to, he's like, he just kept giving credit to the offensive line over and over and over again. And he, I mean, that's not.
You see what Matthew Judon said?
Yeah, that was hilarious.
He's going to play great on offense. Well, besides Mac, he's just turning really the football off. I mean, yeah. But no, you know what that means? That means he's one of the guys.
Exactly.
Like when you can have one of the, like a veteran defensive player take a dig at you, publicly, that means you're one of the guys.
Yeah.
They like you. Yeah.
But I just thought it was the way that Mac did it. Not that it's that hard to sit there and give credit to your offensive line when you threw three passes, but it was very just reminiscent of how you would see Tom Brady answer these questions, these press conferences, a young player who already seemed to grasp that his coach doesn't want him saying anything. Like just, you know,
it was like that. It was like that at Alabama, though. Anyone who followed him in the SEC.
Well, sure, like sure, that. Exactly. Yeah. But that made the transition, like playing for Saban, makes that it easier. Easier. Yeah,
for sure.
Any other thoughts from that game? I thought it was Sean McDermott, like firing Bill Belichick.
Like, hey, dude, you have to go to Foxborough to play them. Like, you know that, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, look, Buffalo's going to be okay. They'll be a 10-win team, right? Yep. They play like Carolina, the Jets, and
Falcons.
Is it the Dolphins? Maybe.
Yeah, Falcons.
So. Or Falcons, excuse me.
They have the Bucks, the Pats, and then the Falcons, Jets, right. And Panthers. So they should get to 10 wins.
Right. So I'm saying they should win three more games, which puts them at 10.
Maybe four.
And then I was going to say, I don't even know if I put them at that, right? Like, who are they beating? Are they beating Tampa Bay and Tampa Bay this week? Probably not.
Probably not.
And then New England and New England?
Probably not.
I don't know. I don't think so.
I'll be picking New England based solely on what Sean McDermott said. Like,
yeah. just the fact that because Bill Belichick's going to have, like, the red ass for him, there's no doubt.
Yeah, and I don't know if you saw, Belichick came up doing his presser, and he was doing this thing where you can sort of, if you've watched, you know, like, I mean, I've done this for 10, 11, 12, whatever long I've been doing this, you know, I've seen a lot of Bill Belichick press conferences, just like anybody else, but you can tell when he's in a post game where he's happy and he's, like, pumped, but he does not want to let you know that he is. And he's like, it looks like he's almost like constipated because he's holding in this. Like, he's like,
he wants to laugh or smile.
He wants to be like, ha, 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 who's the king? And but he's like, played great on offense and ran the ball. Very proud of the
offense. Was it similar to that, like, Skip Bayless weird video he put out like 2 weeks ago when the Cowboys got demolished?
And he's like,
I think. What someone go back and look it up. What someone explained to me was he was trying to like act like he was gonna throw up, but he like couldn't or whatever. It was like 15 seconds of him doing exactly what you just did.
Yeah.
And it was the most, not that like Skip Bayless is the most awkward human being ever, like a guy who like where put post stuff on him.
Certainly, he's like 65. He's like posting shirtless stuff. He's like in a cowboy hat. Like, what are you doing,
bro? Like, it's saying like in these shoes I can't lose. He's like that guy who wears a jersey of someone, you know, who's 40 years younger than him. Like, Jesus.
So,
but anyway,
yes,
it's so weird, but it was like similar to that. Like that's the best comparison I can make.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, basically Belichick was like fighting back any kind of smile because he didn't want to reveal to the Bills, to the media, to anyone but his team, how huge that game was for them. And I think it was huge. Like the Bills.
No, I mean, the AFC playoff seeding, AFC East division. I mean, literally, I'll just pose this question as a result of that game. Was that like the peak of what we're going to see for the Bills? I mean, because if you think about it, like the Pats should only continue to ascend from here, especially as, you know, Mac being a rookie, the other pieces they can add on.
Barmore, Duggar, or younger. I mean,
do we see the Bills peak as far as the AFC East last year? Was that the end of it?
I mean, maybe, but that's sort of my point about the Belichick thing is because the Bills came into Foxborough last year and smoked the Pats, like smacked them in the face.
And yeah, but that was a different deal, right?
I know, but the Bills won the division. Tom Brady's gone for the first year.
They had a cap issues, the COVID opt-outs. You know, like, I look at that and I just say, like, that was their shot. They won the division, but now it's like everyone kind of forgets about it.
That's my point. Is I think the Bills went in there last year and did that and thought, all right, you lost Tom Brady. This is our division now, pal. And then this game was like Belichick's like, no. Listen, yeah. Sean.
Then MJ10 came in.
Yeah.
Hashtag MJ10.
How about MJ10? Very good for him. You know, he's actually going to be all he's going to be doing is it's going to be rope hats with American flags on them. Indiana shirts.
Probably.
Yeah. Jogger.
Patriotic frat boy. It does sound like a street illegal gun. You know, like MJ10. MJ10, like something, you know, one of those. I don't know if it's going to go too well. You know, maybe I think of MAC-10. Like, they probably like, oh, can't talk about that, you know?
MAC-10 does sound like a gun. Is MAC-10 a gun?
Is that a rapper?
I don't know. People always ask AK if she's named after the gun. Like, the gun?
That's her initial.
It's like, yes. Yeah. Yes, like the gun. That's what she was named after. Just from North Carolina.
That's who you married.
I know.
That's who you married.
Oh, Nada says MAC-10 is a rapper and a gun. Okay, all right, there you go. You're right. Okay, I didn't. I.
Hey, I know my semi-automatic weapons. Okay,
all right. I know one. Thanks to my wife. I did not know MAC-10 was a rapper though. So, I guess you don't want to go. I guess you couldn't trademark it because it's trademarked by somebody else. So MJ-10. That's kind of flirting with it too, though, because then you got this fella named Michael Jordan.
Well, just the fact you have MJ in there, it's like, oh, I don't know if I want to touch that. No, really?
Yes, if I know, yeah.
I don't know.
Okay, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll dive a little bit deeper into the AFC playoff race.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
Robert Half Research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
So, the Patriots, now the second favorite to win the AFC. Pretty wild.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, what's wild is we've now got back New England versus Kansas City.
Yep.
I assume Kansas City's the other favorite.
Kansas City is the favorite, yes.
There you go. So then you've got those top two teams like we had with Mahomes versus Brady. So that's the fun part about it. I just think the fun thing at this point in time in the season, and it's just like hard not to like laugh about it or smile, is you've like as of right now, it looks like New England's angling for Tampa. Like, that's what our Super Bowl is going to be in L.A. It's going to be unbelievable if that ends up being the storyline. I mean, I can only imagine. But Tampa looks to be one of the best teams in the NFC. The Patriots are, what, on a 7-game win streak? Is that right now?
Patriots have won 7 games in a row heading into their bye.
That's correct. It's like they're the, you know, the other hottest team
yep.
in the NFL. It's hard not to sit there and go, holy crap, you could get a Brady versus Belichick Super Bowl before it's all said and done. I don't know that after last year, like, we thought that was going to be possible.
No.
Like, it looked like after last year, like, hey, Tom, it was all about Tom Brady. Like, he was the guy. That was what led them. And now, like, Belichick comes rearing back after this offseason. Probably one of his best draft classes in, what, a decade?
Oh, yeah.
And you're going, oh, that like, we may get treated to quite possibly
the
greatest storyline in the history of the NFL.
The greatest storyline in the history of sports. Because all right, first of all, the probability of the Patriots dynasty existing for 20 years is really, really minuscule. Like, it's the greatest dynasty in the history of sports. It's almost impossible to pull off in the free agency era of professional football. And then
salary cap free agency.
Yeah, salary cap free. Yeah. Salary cap era and the free agency era. And then to have the quarterback who stuck with – he had the same coach, the same quarterback for 20 years, so no transition whatsoever. The quarterback leaves, wins the Super Bowl with his other team, and then might meet the same coach in the Super Bowl 2 years later. And people are like, I don't want to see that. It's like, are you nuts? This is
who,
like,
says they don't want to see that?
I mentioned that. I was like, this is what I said on Twitter. Like, this is what we're rooting for. People are like, I don't want to see that. Boy, it's like, this is like, I mean, I'm trying to think what is so rare that it's like an asteroid hitting Earth. Like, that's how rare it is. Which is not
sort of seem like more likely than not these days.
I mean, like Halley's Comet comes around more often than this, the chances of this happening.
God, do you remember the people who believed it was like a sign or something and they all drank the Kool-Aid and died? Yeah. It was like a mass suicide.
Yeah.
That was crazy. I remember being a young kid when that happened, my parents trying to explain what the hell that was. I have no idea what that has to do with the top three contenders out of the AFC.
But I'll ask you this. Are you drinking the Pats Kool-Aid?
If it's not going to kill me, then yes, I am.
But that's where,
you know, Danny Cannell's asked me this every week for the past 5 weeks. And I kept saying, not quite. And then this past week, I am. And I think it purely has to do with the fact that they were able to beat the Buffalo Bills in their house with their arm tied behind their back.
Yeah.
Like literally a one.
They tied their arm behind their back and said, let's go.
They tied their own
let's
arm.
Let's get weird.
And they still beat the Bills. It was quite possibly the hardest flex we've seen in the NFL in quite some time. We haven't seen that few pass attempts since 1974 or something like that.
And they didn't even need to throw the last two passes. They could have easily just thrown like one pass the whole game. Not if you'll bring up the seeds again, because I just want to, what are your thoughts on the top three Brady in terms of the,
I mean, it's New England, it's Kansas City, and then it's a kind of a big question mark in my mind. Like, yeah. I don't buy into Tennessee. I just think since they've lost Derrick Henry, it's been a completely different team. The Colts are another like kind of hot team right now. You might want to start thinking about.
And then want to see
Baltimore. They're the not giving up on.
Yep.
I know Baltimore's been like tough right now, but New England, Baltimore, and Kansas City are to me the top three out of the AFC.
The thing for New England that I like so much about them, and we saw it last night. We saw it when they played the Chargers. They're just so physical and diverse in their run game that, like, look at these teams. Buffalo bad at stopping the run. You know, if it's Sean McVay or, you know, Bengals, Pats, I'm taking the Pats, and you know, just out of principle. Chargers can't stop the run. Chiefs have been better, but I think the Pats can run on them. I think the Pats can run on any team that they, there's not a team that's like, oh, that might be the Pats kryptonite, right? Like, that's the thing. And if the Pats get that one seed, you're talking about all these teams, several of whom are, you know, I mean, tough, I guess they're tougher teams, but a lot of them, you know, sort of pass, like they might have to come to New England and it might be just disgusting weather. And we've seen this a billion times, and Belichick's just going to flex on them again.
Although Mac will have to do something at some point.
Yes.
You know,
for sure.
I really do believe that, because everyone's going to be looking at that game plan and, you know, figuring out a way to forcing him to have to do more in those conditions. So, yeah.
All right. So I would go New England, Kansas City. And then I'm with you. I think it's a very like hot, it's tough to pick who your third contender would be. I think I'll still go Buffalo, but I'm a little worried that the Pats may have put them in a bad mental state of mind. We actually have a clip of, two Bills players being asked a question after
the Poirier game. And Micah.
Yeah.
It's over 40 years since the season has won a game running step two times in a game, passing it a few times. Is that embarrassing?
I mean, what kind
of question? Boy, what are we doing, bro?
What kind of question is that?
It's a question. The nation's going to be criticizing you for calling it slow. Right. I'm asking.
Keep
7 points.
Yeah,
14 to 10.
Is that the final score?
We made stops when we had to. They had one big run. I mean, they got good backs. They kept coming back to a couple of runs. I mean, I don't know how you want us to answer that question.
That's funny. We'll remember that. I'll remember that.
So. The columnist in question asked him, was that embarrassing?
Right.
And like, we talked about this a little bit on the pod on the recap, but it's like, why are reporters so dumb? Why would you ask that question? It's a rude question. Just don't say embarrassing.
I think the wording of it is obviously
upset
Micah Hyde and Poirier for that matter. I thought they handled it pretty well. The reality is, it'd be one thing if this was like the first game where they let up, you know, gave up a bunch of yards in the running game. Yeah. And we saw that a couple weeks ago versus the Colts. So it should be a little bit alarming. And I think the other reason is just like the weather, like basically made them one dimensional and they still couldn't stop it. So look, there's an element of, he needs to have better, like, I don't mean, maybe manners, just more respect in the way he's asking the question. And players after games are going to be more emotional, especially after the fact that they're frustrated. Like, there's a part of them that, and you heard in the answer, they're like, dude, we held them to 14 points. Like, in what world in the NFL does that not win you a game?
Right.
Well, when the weather conditions are like that, that's not when it wins you a game. Yep. And by the way, I remember playing in Buffalo. At that point, DA was playing 2 for 14 with an interception, but it was good enough to get a win.
Wow.
Beat him 6-3. Roscoe Parrish botched a punt in his own territory. The wind was bad. Wasn't quite that cool, but the wind was kind of, you know, crazy and gusty. So yeah, like, you can sit there and say, well, 14 points should win. No, like, whatever you need to do is what's going to win.
Right.
You know, they lost the game earlier this year, 9-6 to Jacksonville. There's no weather issues there. So that's the hard part about it is, you could tell there's some fractures right now in the locker room with the frustration with the offense, because it hasn't been quite as good. Since they start off with 4-1, 5-2, I believe.
Yep.
They haven't been quite as good offensively. They can't run the football like you talked about. And defensively, they haven't been as good as I think everyone expected them to be. So there's frustration right now for Buffalo, and I get it. And look, and I'll just say this too. I think COVID's played a role in leading to this. Because when those reporters are able to be at your locker almost every day, you see them, you talk to them, you're more humanized, right? And like, you can kind of both see each other in that way. I think you gain more respect that way. And when you don't get to see people quite as often, then you, and I believe it was Jerry Sullivan who asked the question.
Yep.
Then you get them spouting off on social media after the fact. Like, oh, this guy can't answer the tough questions. No, dude, it's not that. It's just the way you asked it.
Yep.
You know, it's like the tone in which and how you ended up wording it. So that's my problem with it. I think part of COVID led to this, and like,
that's right. I know you're
distancing and not letting him in the block room, but even him going off afterwards about it, like, he feels like he did nothing wrong.
Yeah. The question was terrible. So to your locker room point, also, you can go to the locker room after the game. And if you have a relationship with somebody on the defense, you can pull them aside and say, hey, like, you know, what are your, like, talk to me about the run, you know, talk to me about the run defense. And instead of having to ask, and a player privately might be like, yeah, hell yeah, we're embarrassed. Like, we got run through, but like, you know, don't put that.
Right.
But if you have to raise your hand and, you know, in front of a room full of people and it's on TV and you're like, well, are you guys embarrassed? Like, 40 years haven't seen anything that bad. And maybe they don't
be honest with you, though. Some of the reporters are some of the most awkward human beings ever.
It's unbelievable.
You know, like, they're the type of person that doesn't have like any, like, I don't know, self-awareness or like social awareness, where like, you'll be in a room with a bunch of people and you'll introduce them to someone. And they'll turn around and the guy will be right behind them. They'll be like, hey, that person's got a funny face. You know, like, they'll say it loud enough where they can hear. And you're like, I feel so awkward right now. Like, it's kind of one of those things. Like, they're like awkward, like, don't know how to talk to people normally, like in social settings.
Right.
And they just blurt something out and they're like, oh, what's wrong with that? It's my job. I'm supposed to ask, you know, questions. It's like, no, maybe you can do a better job of how you go about asking.
Yeah, just don't use the word embarrassing. I mean, that's just not what these guys, you are calling them an embarrassment in front of a bunch of people. You're saying they should be embarrassed. It's, you know, the phrasing was all, and you're right.
I think that comes out too, though, because of the conditions, because of how New England like ran the football on them, but also because of the success they had last year.
Yep.
Like, if they weren't expected to be the top of the AFC East this year, which they were, they were looked at as a potential Super Bowl contender. I think you picked them, didn't you?
Prisco did. I might have sent them the Super Bowl too. Yeah. I didn't winning, but I said,
like, case in point, like, that's the expectations that they were able to accomplish last year and had coming in this year. I mean, if you're being real with yourself, like, yeah, you should be embarrassed for that if you're expecting to win a Super Bowl. Like, how is that any statement of how, you know, where you need to be right now with your team if you're trying to win a Super Bowl?
Yeah, I agree. So the Bills have a lot of questions to answer, and the Patriots suddenly find themselves back in that familiar spot on the top of the heap in the AFC. Brady Quinn is about to find himself in a familiar spot on CBS Sports HQ.
That's right.
In a few, in a little bit. If you listen, it happens on Tuesday. Watch him every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Usually with Pete Briscoe, but Pete's stuck in the courthouse
jury duty. I cannot believe he's actually in jury duty.
Yeah, he's like, we lunch break till 1:15. These people do nothing. What's going on here? People are snoring. And so it's like, shut up, Pete.
Part of me too, though, feels like he's gonna try to like enjoy it, or he'd be like, hey, get paid to sit there and listen to stuff. Like, it's kind of like a real life soap opera, you know? Like, yeah. I watch that stuff. I watch those soap operas.
He does watch soap operas. It's weird.
I know, it's really weird. Cats, soap operas. It's a weird deal.
Very weird human being, Pete Prisco. Also, an awkward question asker. You embarrassed by that? That was pathetic.
That's the thing, is like, I bet he had no problem with that. He'll be like, oh, they need to have thicker skin. It's like, okay, little guy. I mean, you know.
I think Pete has like 15 to 20 stories about almost getting beat up by NFL players for the stuff he would ask or the stuff he would write. He's like, so deal with it. Ah! And then run away. All right. Brady Quinn, as always, my man. Good times.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.